better than nothing.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Squat Cobbler, episode, we think, 44. I'm Kelly Toole, at K-E-L-L-Y-T-H-U-L on Twitter.
I am Mike, at Official Pagan on everything. And I have to say that in between these two episodes, Kelly has slapped at least four people.
Fake news. Hashtag fake news. So we are today going to be reviewing Alice Cooper's 22nd studio album, Dragontown. One of the coolest Alice Cooper names for an album, I think, personally. Dragontown.
Yeah, that's important. I know we usually take a moment, we talk about the artwork, our overall sort of feeling on this thing. My first thing with this record was that's a great album title.
It is. And, you know, making it even more cool is Dragontown is the worst place on Brutal Planet. So Dragontown and Brutal Planet, there's an intersection and connection, and we're going to hear that very explicitly once we start to talk about the album.
Yes, this is a direct sequel.
And so we were introduced to Industrial Alice with Brutal Planet in all of its awesomeness. And this continues largely in that vein, although it starts to pull out of it a little bit. Brutal Planet, you know, we talked when we were doing the Brutal Planet review on the consistency of sound for most of the album. That doesn't permeate for me, Dragontown, quite as much, but tremendous, tremendous title, a continuation. This is really the first time that Alice has ever done kind of two albums connected as deeply as these two are connected. Super, super cool. And I've got a wonderful Dragontown hockey jersey, which I proudly wear whenever I can. And so that's pretty cool as well. So I get to Sherpa Dragontown. I think we'll go ahead and get right into it. The album artwork, which, what are your thoughts, Mike?
You know, I really liked this album cover. It's a very dark, high contrast, up close shot of Alice. And there's also a special edition of it, which had a slip. It still has this cover, but it had a white slipcase with in red foil lettering Dragontown across it. To me, that added even more to it.
Yeah, I love this artwork on it. Personally, I actually think the artwork on this is better than Brutal Planet. Yeah, it definitely continues this kind of industrial dark theme that runs really strong through both of these albums. Pretty cool way to start. And as I mentioned with Brutal Planet, the cover matches what you get. So trivia, this is the first Alice Cooper studio album that did not have any singles on it.
Interesting.
Yeah, it'll be interesting as we go through that to see if there's a candidate for that.
Well, I do have something to, when we get to the song, I'll talk about it, but there was a song that they did push in the marketing. So I would have guessed that was the single.
Yeah, I was really surprised to find out that there wasn't a single off of this, but
especially following up because it's on the same label that Brutal Planet was on, and not only did that have an official single with Gimme, but it also had the promotional disc with three songs on it.
Yeah, and it's not like this album lacks something that could have been under consideration, but so they just made that call. And you know, what kind of an interesting distinction between, so Spitfire is the organization that put out Brutal Planet and Dragontown. What they did to support it, because these are pretty good albums, versus what you see now with Paranormal, with Alice's most recent release, you start to see the power of a digitally savvy music company supporting an artist, what difference that can make. Because this was actually Alice's lowest chart performance since Dada. It ended up at 197 on the Billboard 200 in terms of that. So it's just a little unfair because there's a lot of cool stuff on Dragontown. But then you start to see kind of the very cool things are happening with Paranormal. And it has a lot to do with, one, it's a great album. But then, two, you got some folks behind it that are making sure people are aware to say, hey, you might want to go listen to this.
Well, so that's an interesting thing because I think, I'm not going to say that I believe Spitfire didn't do a good job promoting this record, but I think they missed their target audience promoting this record. And this is where I get to, one of the songs was marketed, but I don't think marketed to the Alice audience.
Yeah, and it's tough too because both Brutal Planet and Dragontown are a departure from, if you're a standard Alice Cooper fan and kind of going through, these are a departure. These are a very kind of clear departure. It's still Alice, but it's a much different Alice. It's much more industrial. So it's kind of a hard group to hone in on, maybe, to kind of know who to go after. But yeah, so no real knocking it. I just, more than anything else, it's a compliment to Alice's current label, who's doing a fantastic job in supporting.
Oh no, they did an incredible job. I, as far as like Alice Records, where I've really been aware of the marketing, because I grew up listening to Alice, but you know, being older, buying the albums myself, and really being aware of how they're released and how they're marketed, there is no question in my mind that Paranormal is the best handled release that Alice has had, probably, you know, since Welcome to My Nightmare or some of those early solo records. I can't remember an album in the time that I've been old enough to be aware of such things that was so aggressively marketed as Paranormal for Alice.
Yeah, it may be actually his best promoted solo work, but also very, very strong. So deserving of that.
Well, yeah, it's also a great record. So that's not to say that the success of the record is entirely because of the marketing. Not at all. It's a great album. But I do think that there is points along the way, especially over these next few records, where labels either didn't promote him or didn't promote him properly. And I, to a degree, I can almost understand it, because when you have an artist like Alice Cooper with a built-in fan base, the labels are probably like, why would we spend more money? The people who love Alice are going to buy this record no matter what. And they're just, you know, dropping the record on the existing Alice fans and not taking that extra step and the extra initiative, because they probably didn't believe in it enough to think it could reach a wider audience. And now his current label's proven them wrong.
Yep, absolutely. So personnel for this album are Alice, of course, on vocals. Ryan Roxey, who I mentioned in the last review, is kind of a stalwart of the Alice Cooper group now. Greg Smith on bass and Kenny Aronoff on drums, with some session musicians of Tim Pierce and Bob Marlette, who we knew from Brutal Planet, was the producer and co-writer. Actually, all of these songs are co-written by Alice and Bob for Dragontown.
And nearly all of them were that combo for Brutal Planet as well.
Yeah, Bob and Alice were on all of them, and then there were some guest appearances by Mr. Ezrin and Brian Nelson, Alice's personal assistant at the time. So I don't think we mentioned in Brutal Planet, but that was released in the year 2000. Dragontown came out the next year, 2001. Followed it pretty quick. There's, like I said, very strong thematic links, and maybe we should just start through the album if you're ready, Mr. Blinsky.
I'm ready, sir.
All right. So we start off with Trigger Man, which actually Alice opened a number of the Dragontown shows with. He eventually swapped it out, but he started with Trigger Man. Your thoughts on that song, Mike?
So if you had asked me to guess the song that was going to be the single on this album, it would have been Trigger Man. And a big part of that is, in Spitfire's marketing for this record, Trigger Man is a song that they pushed, but in my opinion, pushed to the wrong people. I remember going on metal sites that definitely geared towards people who knew more extreme metal and younger fans, and they had Trigger Man streaming on those sites with the ads for the record. So as soon as the ads would pop up for that album, it would start playing Trigger Man. So that's actually how I heard Trigger Man months before this album actually came out. So this was promoted to a degree, but I feel like promoted in the wrong way, because I think the hardcore Alice fans, I'm not saying there's not a lot of crossover, because obviously I like more extreme metal stuff. I saw these ads, but I think the bulk of the Alice fans who, you know, were still kind of on the fence with the more industrial tinged Alice sound, they were definitely not on these sites checking out stuff like that. So I think that marketing sort of fell on deaf ears to a large degree.
So as a song, what do you think about Trigger Man?
As a song, I do like it. And what stands out to me to this, and this kind of goes back to where the marketing maybe didn't quite work. I remember playing Trigger Man on some site that was hosting it. And at the time, somebody who was around a lot who was not an Alice Cooper fan, hearing Trigger Man and really liking that song. And that to me just showed like, wow, this really should have been marketed to a wider audience, a more mainstream audience. And I think that not only would a lot of the hardcore Alice fans come around to this more industrial sound, but I think they really could have picked up a lot of fans who weren't typical or traditional Alice fans, I would say. And I think Trigger Man's a good song. You?
Yeah, I like it quite a bit. I think it's an interesting blend, because you had that very kind of clear vibe on Brutal Planet. And I think Trigger Man carries a lot of that forward. But it starts to kind of pull into more of the other Alice territory we're slightly more familiar with. but you know, I am the trigger man, I am the underhand kind of beginning, very sinister, really strong start to the album. And I enjoy the song quite a bit. It is solid. It's very strong industrial kind of pop to it. But like I said, it starts to cheat into a little bit of other Alice rock that we're used to. And it paints a lyrically great picture of this guy who's trouble, and he's not a person you want to have to deal with, as a trigger man might not have to be. And so it was very cool. So I thought, coming off of Brutal Planet, love that album. All of a sudden I hear Trigger Man, and I'm like, well, the awesome is continuing here. And I thought a very great start to the album.
Absolutely. It's a really strong opener. And not only that, it ties well to the other one, but I do think these songs are, there's a little bit more traditional rock and roll mixed in with the industrial. Whereas I think on Dragon Tail, most of those songs are full on industrial songs. This is more of a blend, and that's why I think that this in some ways might have actually hit an even bigger audience had it been marketed differently.
Yeah, and I think that while there's a huge amount of interconnectivity between Brutal Planet and Dragon Town, there's also kind of a shift in theme where Brutal Planet was Warlord Alice in an apocalyptic environment, and as we move into Dragon Town, the worst place on Brutal Planet, as we've mentioned, it becomes a lot more about hell at this point in time, and a little bit of that descent into hell. And so we get kind of apocalyptic in Brutal Planet, and then you move into kind of consequences, and kind of after you leave the apocalyptic universe, you enter an even darker place, which is the Dragon Town universe and hell, which fits very nicely into the next song, Deeper. Your thoughts on Deeper, Mike?
You know, I wasn't expecting an extended polka jam this early in the album, but I'm glad they did it.
Alice's polka work is greatly underrated.
Yeah, I think a lot of people aren't even aware of it, and especially not people in the polka world. But that's why we're here. That's why we're doing this, so that we can open that up to everyone.
Are you open to revising your assessment of Deeper?
I like Deeper, and I want to touch on something because you kind of hit it. This is definitely more of a hell-oriented record, as you said, and obviously in this song, especially. One thing that I do think is interesting, though, is that somehow this doesn't feel as dark to me as Brutal Planet.
I hear what you're saying. I mean, there was just this punch running through Brutal Planet that just kind of put its foot down on you and kept you down there and just drove, where this is not... poppy by any stretch. We're going to get to some things that get a little lighter, deeper in this album, no pun intended, but I hear what you're saying in that there was such kind of this kind of sonic story going on with Brutal Planet and strong consistency and power driving down where this starts to lighten up. It's still, I mean, Deeper is not, like I said, a toe tapper by any stretch of imagination, but it is a little bit lighter. And it is pretty direct about, you've had Trigger Man, so you got a bad guy, and now you kind of talk about you're basically being pulled down deeper into hell. I felt to a degree, and we mentioned now on two episodes, this is not a trilogy. It's not Last Temptation, Brutal Planet, Dragon Town. But I do think to a certain degree, Deeper has a fit with the idea of the showman pulling Steven down a little bit deeper into it. So there is kind of almost a hint of a connection to Last Temptation there, which again, it takes you away from industrial.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. And overall, and again, this isn't a light album, so it's kind of difficult to articulate in a way, and you really kind of have to listen to it yourself, because this is still a dark, harder edged Alice, but it doesn't really have that same punch. Like Kelly summed that up really well, like calling it a punch. It doesn't quite have that same punch that Brutal Planet has. And like you said already, this is something that, while they're not a trilogy, could easily fit more into the Last Temptation world.
Yeah, good song, though. I mean, Trigger Man was strong. I think Deeper is really strong. And then we move into the title track, Dragon Town. Mike?
So I like this song. It's not as great of a title track as Brutal Planet was, but I do really like this song. And there is a song on this album, and I kind of hinted to Kelly before we did this, there's a song on this album that is one of my favorite Alice songs overall, not just favorite on this record, but I think, one of the best Alice songs and is a guarantee for my playlist. So would the title track Dragon Town be something for your playlist?
No, it wouldn't. And this was, I mean, I'm embarrassed to say this because I'm a big fan of this album. I'm a big fan of Brutal Planet and Mike and I were very excited to kind of get into this part of Alice's library. And kind of coming into it, I'd forgotten about it. It's like, is there a track called Dragon Town on Dragon Town? Until I kind of got back into it. But then obviously as soon as I started to listen to it, I'm like, oh, of course there is. And I remember the song and it kicks in. But there is, it didn't like capture my memory as much as some of the other songs on this album. I do think, and boy, it's a high bar. Brutal Planet is such a powerful, amazing song. So as a title track song to match it, it's going to be a tough thing to meet. But it is a good song. It's a very good song. I was actually very surprised that it just didn't stick out in my memory as strongly as a few other songs on this album. It does talk about Al saying, come on, I'm bringing you back to Dragon Town. And this was one where he made some very direct connections back to Brutal Planet, because this is a continuation of the storyline. I said we move from apocalyptic to kind of hell, but he's starting to make some connections back. So we're descending down into hell. And so who's joining us in hell? Well, who's joining us in hell is the wicked young man from Brutal Planet, kind of called out explicitly. There's someone picking up bones, back to pick up the bones. So that's there. And then, you know, we always like to kind of mention when Alice mentions Alice in a song, and he does in Dragon Town. And there's Alice Deer with all the little things that got him here, calling back to the little things from Brutal Planet. So three very direct callbacks to three songs on Brutal Planet in Dragon Town, kind of creating that connection. And Alice sings the hell out of this in terms of just kind of connecting it and got a nice kind of sinister to it. And the whole kind of come on and, you know, we'll dig you a hole deep in the ground and bury your soul down in Dragon Town. Good stuff. Really good stuff. So I really like, as I got back and got prepped for the song, I was like, wow, I really, really like Dragon Town. And I was just embarrassed a little bit. It's like, why wasn't that at the tip of my tongue to go, oh yeah, Dragon Town. I remember all of that, but it's a really good song. And it appears one of its main jobs is to say, hi, I'm Dragon Town. Let me connect you clearly back to Brutal Planet.
And on our previous episode,
without a doubt. All right. I'm very interested in your it's a one. I have zero clue when you're talking about one of these songs on the rest of this album is kind of a super passionate one for you. I'm looking through the rest of it, and I like a lot of these songs on this album quite a bit, but I have no clue. I have like zero clue which song it is you're going to call out. So I'm looking forward to hearing that. But the next song is Sex, Death, and Money. And I would like to point out, we've talked a little bit in the last episode about the seven deadly sins, and this was something that Alice was potentially working on to create a Broadway show about the seven deadly sins. And as a reminder to the listeners, the seven deadly sins are pride, envy, gluttony, lust, anger, greed, and sloth. I feel to a degree, sex, death, and money has a little greed in it, has a little lust in it. So I think that there's a good kind of connection there. Your thoughts on sex, death, and money, Mike?
Well, first off, the song that I love on this album is Every Woman Has a Name. No.
Better not be.
The song that I love on this album that is a guaranteed playlist track for me is Sex, Death, and Money. I love this song. Also, I feel, and you know, maybe this would have corrected my slight issues with Brutal Planet at the end. This would have perfectly sat on Brutal Planet. Perfectly.
If they'd taken the last two songs off of Brutal Planet and replaced it with Sex, Death, and Money, it had moved up on my list.
I absolutely love the music. It has that punch to it that Brutal Planet had. It's very industrial, but it's still accessible. It's still Alice. Great snarl on it. Incredible lyrics. And what is great about the lyrics on this one is it's still dark. It's still edgy. The same way you got that stuff with Brutal Planet, but he does mix in some humor with it and does it in a great way where it's never campy or hokey. The humor is just perfect. The tone of this song is perfect.
It is. I mean, I love this song so much. It is this combination of great rock and humor. It's so Alice. This is a quintessential Alice song. This process where he delivers lyrically this idea of, so I mentioned from a seven deadly sins standpoint, lust, that kind of comes into there. And he talks about having to watch some adult video content. And he goes, and the chorus is, I was so offended as I sat for 3 hours, you know, which I thought was just, and just the delivery of it is perfect. And this is such a wonderfully executed song. If I were to guess, looking through there, this would be a strong candidate. I'm struggling. I love this song. And so maybe this is a playlist one for me as well. But this is a great song. This is my favorite song on the album.
Definitely my favorite song on the album. It's a guaranteed playlist song for me. I just love, not only does it have that same just gravelly punch that you got on just about every song on Brutal Planet, but the mix of the humor in it in such a clever way. Like, this is almost like when you see, like, this is Alice as like a really sketchy TV preacher or politician defending their actions or trying to get out of what they're doing. And that line, the I was so offended as I sat for 3 hours, is just perfect. The delivery is perfect. I love this song.
It is one of his greatest moments, as far as I'm concerned, in terms of a career of very, very cool things. There's a magic to this song. It's a wonderful song. So if nothing else, make sure you listen to Sex, Death, and Money, folks, because it's pretty incredible. So we move into Fantasy Man, which I'm going to offer before you provide your insights on this, Mike, that might deal a little bit with Pride, another of the seven deadly sins. So what are your thoughts on Fantasy Man?
So it's not that I dislike Fantasy Man. It's just that coming after Sex, Death, and Money, whatever comes after that is going to be a step down, in my opinion.
I hear you, because there's a deftness to Sex, Death, and Money in terms of when the humor is delivered. This whole, I was so offended as I sat for 3 hours. It's just subtle, but not subtle and kind of clever. Fantasy Man, there's not a lot of subtlety to Fantasy Man at all. It's a crazy fun song. You know, when it starts off with, I don't drink tea or white Chablis, I sit around and watch TV. And then later when he talks about, I hate opera, I hate Oprah. You know, it's cool. I really, really like this song. It is fun. It is sillier than Sex, Death, and Money. There's humor in it as well.
Yeah, and this is definitely the point where I feel like on the record, you know, it's not going to be, to me, you had the humor in Sex, Death, and Money that was woven in so perfectly. Now you have humor again in another song that's a little more on the surface. And it's not that this isn't a good song or a fun song, because it is. Whatever came after Sex, Death, and Money was going to be a step down, in my opinion. And then you add something with more humor to it, and to me, that's when you start to see, like, this is not as dark as, to me, as dark or as much of a attack as Brutal Planet was.
Yeah, I think it would have been really smart to put a little bit of space between Sex, Death, and Money and Fantasy Man, because you're going to draw those immediate comparisons and the distinctions from there. And when you start with Trigger Man, Deeper, Dragon Town, Sex, Death, and Money, there's a kind of a vibe going on. And Fantasy Man, musically, kind of continues to carry that forward. But it gets, I don't want to use silly per se, but it's a little more on the nose. I really enjoy the song. I think it's funny and it's cool and it's Alice having fun. You can kind of tell that, but it's occupying a tough spot because you're coming off of Sex, Death, and Money, and it doesn't fare as well. If it, a little distance would have been helpful.
Yeah, coming off of Sex, Death, and Money, to me, everything's going to be a step down. But then when you do something where the humor is more on the surface like this, it should have been spaced out better. This is a sequencing issue to me, because this is a fun song. I like this song. This is a sequencing problem for me.
I'm with you. And so we move then from Fantasy Man into Somewhere in the Jungle, which is actually the longest track on the album at 5 minutes and 22 seconds. Your thoughts, Mike?
Again, to me, not that it, you know, this is, again, not like a dislike situation, but I feel like, all right, Trigger Man was really good. I like Deeper in Dragon Town. Sex, Death, and Money, we really kind of peaked. And this is where, to me, this album softens up a little bit in the middle and doesn't quite hit that mark that I feel like was set with Dragontown. And I don't want to like pick on individual songs, I don't think, especially Not Every Woman Has a Name, but which we're not up to yet. But, you know, that song in particular, I don't want to pick on. But coming through this album for me, like, this is where it kind of loses it a little bit. Does that make sense?
It does. And for me, because I mean, I'm all in on this album so far, you know, varying degrees on songs. But these first five songs have all been very, very, very strong. And then Somewhere in Jungle, which is not a bad song, and there's some interesting kind of the storyline within it is good, but it doesn't stand up as well to the previous five songs as well. And so it is this kind of slip a little bit where it's been kind of like bang, 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 bang. There's been strong stuff. Fantasy Man suffers from being After Sex, Death, and Money, but still a pretty cool song. Somewhere in the Jungle is nowhere close to a skip for me, but it doesn't match anything for me that came before it.
Yeah, it's not a skip, but you know, we've been running along at a solid pace here so far, and it is a little bit of, it trips it up a tiny bit.
So Alice, being the master of subtlety, we'll move into the next song, which is called Disgraceland. Very interested to hear what Mike has to say about Disgraceland.
So are you an Elvis fan?
That'd be a little strong for me. I would not. No, I'm not.
Neither am I. I get where this fits into the themes that he's kind of exploring. The song itself, though, doesn't fit, kind of in the same way that, you know, Take It Like a Woman didn't really fit. And again, we're back to like really surface humor, like Fantasy Man, like way comparatively way more on the nose. And this is where like this whole stretch of songs, like, to me, I really like this record, but it's not going to hit the same. Like, going into this, I really thought, and you and I had talked about this before the show, I really kind of thought these were going to be back to back on my list. And then re-listening to it back through in sequence, and it's not that I dislike this song, I don't, but listening back to it in sequence, this is where it's not going to be right behind Brutal Planet for me. You?
So with you 100% on, I came into it going like, yeah, these are going to be, they're going to be side by side. And I actually, prior to really refreshing myself, thought that Dragontown might be ahead of Brutal Planet. And as I went through it, I was like, no, that's not going to happen. But it's Somewhere in the Jungle and some of the other songs that are coming up that created the separation for me. I think we've established in kind of previous shows that I'm a simple man and get humored easily. And there's a lot about Disgraceland that I like, because you do have Alice basically singing as Elvis, which is kind of amazing. This idea of Elvis, you know, eventually realizing that, you know, you were a big guy now, but you're a sideman here, as back to the hell theme and kind of being pulled down. He died on a throne. Alice thrown in lots of, Alice is a pretty good Elvis impersonator, which is kind of impressive. And actually, when they go way back to when the original Alice group got together and they were kind of in high school performing songs, they performed Beatles songs and Elvis songs. And so this is a demonstration that Alice can totally pull off a very respectable Elvis impersonation. And lyrics like, I had a lot of girls, I had a lot of guns, it speaks to me. I enjoy it quite a bit. So this is a little bit of a guilty pleasure. It doesn't fit kind of with where Dragontown's been going to a degree, with the exception that if a lot about Dragontown is the descent into hell, this is Elvis going to hell and a little bit of the storyline towards it. And so there's a fit there. So it's a fun song. There's some fit questions to it. Like I said, a guilty pleasure. I really do enjoy Disgraceland. It's not a playlist song, but I do enjoy it quite a bit, and it's funny.
Yeah, I like this song, but this is where, you know, this kind of whole stretch of songs here is where we separate Brutal Planet and Dragontown for me. Also, I would be curious, because it does kind of, I don't know if pick on is the right way to put it, but because of choosing Elvis as a particular topic, when I feel like there's probably a lot of celebrities who he could have, you know, slipped in there as somebody who's in hell in Dragontown or whatever. So I am a little bit curious as to why Elvis. Like, is there some sort of a story there, whether it was just because they had covered Elvis songs, like you said, or was there any kind of interaction between them at any point?
Actually, there was. Alice visited Graceland, and at one point in time, Elvis handed Alice a gun. and said, "Try and shoot me, man." And Alice was like, "Cool, I'm going to get to shoot Elvis." And then Elvis did his karate stuff and kind of buried Alice onto the ground because Alice isn't the biggest guy in the world. So there was a little Alice-Elvis intersection. Plus, at kind of the time that Alice really emerged as being this amazing thing that everyone was interested in, around the time of, yes, Billion Dollar Babies, I'd like to point out. But around that time where he was...
Second best Alice Cooper record?
Almost right. So Elvis was a little embittered to say, why is this Alice Cooper guy is doing so well versus me? But yeah, they intersected and there was this whole kind of try and I'm going to disarm you kind of thing going on at Graceland. So there was a little Alice Elvis interaction from there, so which is kind of cool.
Now, do you think that informed the song or did he just choose Elvis because Elvis is so iconic?
I think that informed the song. And there's another incredibly major pop performer coming up later in this album that Alice kind of goes directly after that he also had some pretty good association with. There's a couple continuity things there where things kind of connect. So, but yeah, Disgraceland, it is fun. It is a lot. I don't know if you want to use the word silly per se, but it is definitely more of a farce. But it's Elvis singing Elvis pretty respectfully. So, now we'll move into Sister Sarah.
So my main problem with this song is it's the last one before my favorite, Every Woman Has a Name. And by this point in the record, I'm just trying to get to that song.
I know, you're just waiting, tapping your toe.
I'm almost hitting the skip button, and it's nothing against Sister Sarah, but I'm almost hitting the skip button so I can get to Every Woman Has a Name.
Yeah, this is an interesting song. Lots of shifts in tempo, lots of things going on. Talks about her feeding her habit, which is kind of the typical, very clever Alice Cooper thing to say. Because Sister Sarah is about a nun who falls from grace. Back again to the theme of everybody kind of going to a bad place. This tail end, it started out so, so strong. And then some things just start happening towards the end that for me, aren't nearly as strong as the front of the album. And Sister Sarah, some clever lyrics, some really wild swings in tempo in terms of approach there. But really not a favorite song of mine on this album.
Yeah, not a favorite. It's not that I dislike it, but again, this goes to, as we both said, After Sex, Death, and Money, and then Fantasy Man, which is a good song, but maybe sequenced a little off there. This album kind of starts to not really fire in all cylinders the way that Brutal Planet did. And this is just another example of that. Not a bad song. You brought up there's some interesting stuff with tempo changes in it. I'm all for nuns falling from grace, but this just isn't one of my favorites. But my favorite's coming.
That's right. So now we're going to move to Mike's favorite song on the album, Every Woman Has a Name. So a little bit of behind-the-scenes information as Mike and I got ready to discuss. We've been crazy excited to talk about Brutal Planet and Dragontown. And as we got ready to talk about Dragontown, we both pause for a second and go, Every Woman Has a Name. What do you have to say about it? And I'm like, I don't even remember it. But apparently it's Mike's favorite song. So Mike, tell us a little bit more about your favorite song.
Well, Kelly already kind of gave it away a little bit here, which is I don't remember this song. And I listened to this album maybe 10 hours ago and don't really remember this song. So yeah, that's what I have to say about this song. If I just recently listened to it, it didn't leave that much of an impression. Should tell you something.
Yeah, it's a ballad. I think, and that's all I have to say. Because it's just, you know, that distinguishes it from this whole space when there's a lot of stuff you remember. And I mean, we talked about Brutal Planet, every song had this uniqueness to it. This one's, you know, it's a little forgettable. It's a ballad. It's not a bad execution, but wow, it's just, like I said, the fact that both Mike and I had completely blanked on it kind of says something about its relative strength to the rest of the stuff on the album.
Yeah, it kind of tells you everything you need to know about Every Woman Has a Name.
So we'll just move on to I Want to Be God.
So do you remember how when we were way back 2 weeks ago or the previous thing we recorded, do you remember when I was talking about reviews of Brutal Planet?
Yeah.
So during that, I mentioned that there was a religious-themed music magazine that was hugely into Brutal Planet. They also reviewed Dragontown and were, again, very, very positive in their reviews of it. One of the songs they really focused on was I Just Want to Be Your God, because that and The Sentinel, they talked about how those are from the perspective of Satan or a Satan-like character, the same as Gimme was on Brutal Planet. So this is hardcore Christian's favorite song on the album.
And to me, you know, when we talked about Brutal Planet, one of our greatest compliments to it was the strong uniqueness. While there was a consistency in terms of the sound, every single song had its own space. I Just Want to Be God, to me, you line it up with Sister Sarah, and there's too much similarity there for me in terms of just the feel for it overall. So, not meaning to offend the Christians who are big fans of it, but I Just Want to Be God is not a passion point for me.
Yeah, I can definitely get that.
So we talked about Elvis. Now we're going to move into It's Much Too Late, which also refers to another acquaintance of Alice from back in the day.
And who might that be, Kelly?
John Lennon. And this is fairly direct to John Lennon in a couple of the comments in the lyrics. And actually, Alice, again, I mentioned very, very early, original, when the Alice group first got together, they did Beatles songs and Elvis songs. So Alice is no stranger to singing in a similar fashion to John Lennon. And It's Much Too Late is Beatlesque in many respects, which is kind of a strange arrival in the industrial world of Brutal Planet to Dragontown to have a Beatlesque song show up. I like this song quite a bit. You know, how it fits in the overall context of this album, you know, it is a departure. It talks about the road to hell is paved with guys with good intentions. And so it's kind of interesting from there. But and it's actually a very kind of, to me, appealing song. And it does very much tie into the theme of it. Brutal Planet was about apocalypse. Dragontown's about hell. And It's Much Too Late kind of hits this kind of pretty directly in a Beatlesque way. So I like this song. It's an interesting fit given the rest of the tonality of the album. But it's an enjoyable song for me.
I like the song. The Beatlesque elements to it don't necessarily win me over for it, so it is not a favorite of mine on the record. It is a favorite, though, among the Christian writers, because this is mentioned right below the Satan Perspective song as being a standout track on this album.
Yeah, it goes pretty direct to some of the themes that might speak well to those folks quite a bit.
These last three songs definitely appeal to the religious element, or appeal more so the religious element of what Alice was bringing out on these two records.
Definitely. Which takes us to the final song, The Sentinel.
Another Satan Perspective song, another Christian favorite song. What do you think?
Well, you turned that on me pretty quick. So my note
to the end of the religious side of it, I kind of wanted your.
So it's interesting. So I had mentioned to Mike as we got ready to record the show that we try and do our homework and prep for these shows. And one of the key pieces is to actually kind of get back through the album very thoroughly and take some notes and kind of make sure we got our thoughts together before we sit and talk about it. You know, I know that may be hard to believe when you hear us talk, but we actually do try and do some things. And so I was traveling.
You should have seen my tentacle porn notes.
Yet another edit for me to have to do for YouTube. So I was traveling and in a hotel and kind of writing down the notes for Brutal Planet, writing those notes for Dragontown so that I could talk about it. And my notes for Sentinel say, blah, blah, blah. So I'm a little bit.
Now I'm even more glad that I passed this one off to you so quickly, because so, obviously nothing I have to say about this will bring you that level of insight.
Yeah. So I'd like to say blah, blah, blah about Sentinel, but it is, again.
How great would have been if instead of passing to you, I was like, well, let me tell you, blah, blah, blah.
Blah, blah.
You're like, oh, that's the same thing I wrote.
That's exactly what I felt about the song. It is, as multiple points in this album have occurred, this is a song from Satan's point of view, and he's the Sentinel, and there's a darkness to this, and it's a solid song. It is interesting that the front half of this album overshadows the second half of this album significantly. The Sentinel I very much like It's Much Too Late. It's a different kind of thing thematically. I Am the Sentinel kind of pulls it back into the Brutal Planet Dragontown universe. Solid for me, enjoyable, nowhere close to a playlist song on that. And it just kind of rounds out the album. Not a bad finish to Dragontown, but not anywhere close to the greatest song on this album.
Right. Not a bad song. You know, I don't know that I have real skips on this one, but at the same time, like, it never picks back up to the point that you have with those first few songs.
So this is awesome because the last time we did an album, which is Brutal Planet, Mike was the Sherpa, and as he guided us through the album, we came to this point. He, in his Sherpa capacity, pushed to me the responsibility to provide the first Pat Boone song and the first ranking, and so I'm going to follow suit and say Mike. So we're at the end of Dragontown. We need to pick the Pat Boone song. Where would you go?
Well, as tempted as I am to say he would do a swing version of Sex, Death, and Money, I really think it's going to be Fantasy Man.
I can totally go with that. I'm gonna just co-sign on Fantasy Man for Pat Boone. It makes the blog post interesting and easier to develop, by the way, when we agree on that. This is another one. Both Brutal Planet and Dragontown are really tough to assign a Pat Boone to. I could see him doing It's Much Too Late, but I like Fantasy Man. So we're gonna go there. And now, the big challenge.
Dun, dun, dun.
The ranking.
So, all right. So some interesting things happened to me when we were doing this. As we've already mentioned, coming into this thing, I really thought, and you really thought as well, that these were basically going to be a pairing on our list. I realized going back through it that they are not for me. So then this came down to, so just like Brutal Planet was, do I like From the Inside or Brutal Planet better? This one doesn't knock out Schools Out for me. So it really comes to this or Welcome to My Nightmare. And I think prior to this week, I would have put this above Welcome to My Nightmare. But something happened this week, which is I acquired the Alice Cooper Welcome to My Nightmare Special Edition DVD, which has the, I believe, 1975 TV special that he did with Vincent Price, which has the entire album on it with proto music videos that are linked together through little skits that he does with Vincent Price and little monologues and things like that. And it really gave me a deeper, better appreciation for the album. So I think it's going to fall between Welcome to Nightmare and Last Temptation for me.
So that puts it at number 8 on Mike's list, between Welcome to My Nightmare and Last Temptation.
Which it's still a top 10 album for me.
Oh man, this is hard. This is hard for me because I'm actually, Mike and I have really over the last several albums been very, very much aligned in terms of kind of where we ended up one or two spots apart from there. We're gonna differ somewhat significantly. Well, not horribly significantly, but a little bit. Three spots, because I'm going to actually go a little deeper into my list, no pun intended, from Dragontown. But I'm going to say, and it's tough because Sex, Death, and Money is a rocket. You know, it continues to push this album up higher and higher and higher in terms of where I'd want to have it. But I'm actually going to place Dragontown between, in my 11th spot, between Flush the Fashion. So Flush the Fashion is above Dragontown, but above Constrictor.
Interesting.
Yeah, and it's tough because if we had stopped after the first 5 songs, it's up a lot higher for me. The second half of this album gets a little spotty. Still love it because, you know, it's ahead of Constrictor. And I love Constrictor. It's a great, cool album.
Yeah.
As well. But I'm going to slot it in at 11 for me on my list.
Well, that's what's hard with this now, too, is that we're pretty deep into this catalog. And we're really considering all of these albums now. So there's just there's so much to sort through that albums that, you know, maybe I would have told you in the beginning were going to place higher for me. Now I'm not so sure as we talked about.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. And it's tough because some of the stuff coming up is like Eyes of Alice Cooper and Dirty Diamonds, which are really great albums. But they're going to have a hard time breaking the top 10 for me because some of the other stuff that's on there. they're going to have a hard time for things like Dirty Diamonds and Eyes Alice Cooper getting ahead of Dragontown. Along Came a Spider is going to be interesting. Paranormal is going to be interesting.
Along Came a Spider is one I'm really looking forward to as well.
Yeah, that's that is, I think, an unfortunately underappreciated album.
I completely agree with that.
So, yeah, it just seemed to kind of vanish on folks a little bit. All right, so Dragontown ends up as number 8 on Mike's list, number 11 on mine. We're going to be coming up actually to The Eyes of Alice Cooper as our next album. That was Dragontown came out in 2001, Brutal Planet 2000, Eyes of Alice Cooper 2003. So the next time we talk Alice, we'll be talking The Eyes of Alice Cooper, where we kind of depart from the industrial world and get back more to kind of straightforward garage band rock, and some very interesting conversations will be had.
Indeed. I mean, certainly not as interesting as what's coming on Dirty Diamonds, the Exhibit collaboration.
Yeah, so, but now, so the Exhibit collaboration, you know, not meaning to get too far ahead of ourselves, but I think it's worth a conversation. In the official release of Dirty Diamonds, the CD that came out for Dirty Diamonds, was Stand on there?
Hmm. I mean, it was on the CD that I purchased.
We'll have to check on that. Yeah, mixed emotions on that one, but that'll be that's gonna be an interesting conversation when we get to that point. Given the fact, because actually, once Mike and I finish Alice Cooper, we're going to be going through the entire Exhibit catalog and covering it all. So you all have that to look forward to.
One person just got so excited.
Yes. Exhibit. So, all right, so gang, the fun keeps coming. There's just, it's great stuff coming up. It's all really good material coming up. We're at number 22. So Mike,
yes,
if you were to guess, you know, last time we talked about Alice, I threw out a bunch of numbers about our YouTube activity, and it's very cool, the folks that are connecting with us and all of that. But, you know, of course, our core is the podcast, the nurture and support, and Squat Cobbler Network in terms of delivering that out. Our first Alice Cooper review was Pretty's for You. It was actually Squat Cobbler number 5, Cinco Squato.
Okay.
Any idea when we did that?
Like month and day kind of did it?
Yeah, yeah.
No.
Even year.
Also no.
July 1st, 2016.
Hmm.
So we've been doing Alice reviews for well over a year.
Wow.
Yeah, I had no idea on that. So we're going to, as Mike mentioned, I believe in the last episode we did, we've been, you know, we're in rotation with Nurture and Support with the awesome Mel in terms of providing podcast content. And in the past, Mike and I have been rotating between doing an Alice Cooper review and a recommendation review. And so recently here, we said, hey, let's kind of pick the pace up. So we're doing a couple more Alice Cooper reviews kind of back to back. But I still think it's going to be about a good 18 months before we get through the entire Alice Cooper catalog. But yeah, I was actually surprised to find out that July 1st, 2016 was when Pretty's for You conversation came out. So we've been going at this for a while.
I think the real thing this has all been building up to is the announcement of where Stand falls on our playlist.
Number 1. Yeah, that'll be, so we'll be getting to that soon, gang. All right, so, man, like I said, it's all exciting stuff from here on out. There's very cool stuff coming. 27 Alice Cooper albums. We have just finished the 22nd, so we've got 5 more left to knock off. And keep listening, keep commenting, keep subscribing. Really appreciate all the support you guys have given us. And with that, I'm going to say thank you for listening. I'm Kelly.
Thank you, everyone. Mike here, and Kelly will still slap you.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Ooh.